Hello, fantasy sports fans, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. I am, of course, your host, Chris Mitchell. Glad to be talking some fantasy baseball with you today. We talk a lot of different types of baseball on this program. Lately, we've been doing fantasy because every Thursday I try to bring up a fantasy fix kind of segment to the program. And so we're going to be doing that going forward. So Thursday is 11 a.m. Eastern time. We're going to be doing fantasy sports with George Kurtz and Brandon C. Williams, both from rotoexperts.com. George Kurtz is the closer report guy. He does a lot of different things, wears a lot of hats, writes about a lot of different fantasy sports. He's on the Fantasy Sports Television Network and Radio Network. So it's not like he's just the closer report guy, but he does the closer report weekly over at rotoexperts.com. I believe it posts every Tuesday. So we get him on here on Thursday and talk about the closers and the carousel and the craziness that goes on in the ninth inning throughout the season. Pointed by the fact that last week, when it was the first report we actually were able to do, he talked about a third and kind of suggested almost half of closers lose their job during the season. If that's not a crazy carousel or lunacy, I don't know what is. So we're going to talk with him about the ninth inning today. I also like to get a little bit of thoughts rather than just whore him out as a closer-only guy. I like to ask him a few fantasy questions, so we'll get into that as well today. I like to ask him about the hot and cold players, who he likes, who he doesn't like, things like that. And also, I usually ask personal questions because I like to take advantage of the access I have to some of these people that come on the program. I think, you know, you can disagree with me if you like, but I think I get some pretty good guests that come on here from a variety of different outlets and media locations and things like that. And so when I can take advantage of that, you know, Ito Saris likes to come on to talk pitching with me. Rob Nyer just has baseball thoughts in general. Jim Callis comes on to talk prospects. These people do very good work in the different areas that they do. And so I like to milk them as best I can to help myself. And so I'm going to ask George today because I have a league where the commissioner wants to change some scoring categories. So I'm going to ask him about that. And like I said, we'll talk about the hot players and things like that. And then we'll get into the closer report. Then at 11:25, Brandon C. Williams from rotoexperts.com will come on. He'll talk about the waiver wire report. I'll ask him about some of his general thoughts as well. I'm not going to ask him the categories question, but I will ask him some fancy questions, who he likes, who he doesn't like, things like that. Because while George has his opinion, there are others. So, you know, everybody, you know, I like this guy or I don't believe in that guy because of what he's done. It's a small sample size situation there. So I do or do not like that player. So when Brandon comes on, I'll get his thoughts as well. Same topic, but I expect to get very different answers. And Brandon's interesting, I got to say. He writes about a lot of different sports as well. I believe he posts on CBS.com these days as well, if I'm not mistaken, about basketball. So he writes for rotoexperts.com, but I believe he does kind of spread out and he's posted on a variety of different sites from time to time as well. So good for him. But last week he said we should cut Edwin Diaz, which I believe George specifically said not to, and I agree with him wholeheartedly, but Brandon has his opinion. So when he comes on at 11:25, we'll talk with him and get some of his interesting and often a little bit different takes than what George does. So we'll be doing that in about 20 minutes. If you want to follow us on Twitter or if you want to follow me, I got my name as the PTNBL podcast, a podcast to be named later, PTBNL, and it's at CJMitch73. Again, that's at CJMitch73. If you want to talk with us on Facebook or suggest topics or you have trade questions or any fantasy-related question or any baseball question for that matter, this program has a Facebook page. It's a podcast to be named later. We also talk fantasy over at the rotoexperts.com fantasy sports show. Those are two Facebook pages I have that if you want to follow me. And then I actually post and post information about baseball and things like that over at my own little Facebook group called MLB News and Notes. So if you want any of those, you can go to any of those locations. But probably the best way is just find me on Twitter at CJMitch73. Let me bring George Kurtz into the program here. George, we had you on last week. Great to finally be able to get the technical difficulties out of the way and get the ninth inning into perspective to some degree anyway. How's everything going on with you? How's fantasy baseball? How are you dealing with all this rain and lots of craziness going on? Even Jacoby Ellsbury, your boy in center field, makes a nice catch last night and ends up with a concussion. He'll probably be out for about 3 months if you know anything about Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah, he's on a 7-day DL. He's got a concussion and they say a sprained neck, so that is a problem there. I guess in hindsight, maybe he shouldn't have caught the ball. But listen, there's nothing, you can't really blame a player for doing that. Second time this year he's done that. He's done that a couple of times. Second time this year he's been hurt while doing it, and he's already placed on a DL. Yankees called up Rob Refsnyder. But no baseball for the Yankees today. They've already been rained out.
What do you think about – I want to ask you about some of the hot and cold players. And I'm in an expert dynasty league. I believe it has 16 teams. It's a rotisserie format. Every roster, I think, is something like 25 players. We start – it's one of those big leagues where you start 9 pitchers, 5 outfielders, corner, middle infielders, two utility spots, one catcher, thank God for that. So it's a very deep league, lots of starting positions. My offense in that league is putrid. I went pitching in that league. Starling Marte was one of the guys that kind of helped carry me last year. Obviously, he's not doing anything for me this year. So when Matt Adams became available, he was on the waiver wire in that league, surprisingly. We only have 2 DL spots. We exacerbated that topic last week in the craziness it does. We have 3 DL spots, I'm sorry, in that league. So lots of teams have positions that they need to fill, but they have a lot of guys on the DL that makes space very difficult. And so Matt Adams was a free agent. And so that was the only way I could really get offense in an affordable way. So I bid on the FAAB waiver wire and got him basically, again, out of offensive desperation. I had to add him. He's been on fire since he took over for Freddie Freeman over in Atlanta at first base. But are you buying into this guy? He's always been an intriguing yet streaky, inconsistent, up and down kind of guy. What are your thoughts on Matt Adams?
Well, I'm surprised he'd be available in that size league, 16-team league. Well, most guys like that are gone. Yes, I'm a believer. I think he's needed playing time. Unfortunately, with the Cardinals, they had plenty of guys. You know, Matt Carpenter moved to first base, really killed his shot there. You know, they have Peralta, Jerko, Medes Diaz, Colton Wong. They have plenty of infielders there where he wasn't going to get playing time. The problem is, you're going to get probably 2 months out of him. You know, then when Freeman comes back, where's Adams going to play in Atlanta? No DH there. So once again, he's going to lose playing time and just be a bench player there. I was a little surprised that Atlanta would acquire him. I understand they gave up next to nothing. I think it's a good sign, by the way. I like that the Braves listen, I don't want to offend Braves fans here, but they're not planning to win this year. So I was surprised they'd go out and acquire somebody like this to replace Freeman. What if they, you know, rather than just bring up some blah guy from the minor leagues. So good to see for that. Good for Matt Adams owners now. But in 2 months, you're going to be looking again.
Yeah, and he could play a little bit. I mean, the Cardinals tried to get his bat into the lineup, and they put him out in the outfield, which is nice that they even tried. The Braves could make that attempt as well. The problem being it was basically proven as a significant, total and complete disaster. So that problem means that it's nice that they tried, but it may have proved that he can't do it. And that would go to your point, which is that if he doesn't play first base, he doesn't play anywhere, which means he needs to be in the American League. Maybe the Red Sox should be looking at him rather than the Braves, but nonetheless. Let me ask you about another player, one of the guys that's been really hot over the last couple weeks, Jake Lamb. I've been a believer of this guy in the sense that I never thought he'd be a top 5 type of third baseman, but I've always liked him as a low-end guy, a cheap guy, a guy that you wouldn't mind having, and if you needed to or if you didn't spend any assets at that position, having him as your guy wasn't the worst thing in the world. So from that perspective, I've always really liked him. Again, I never predicted that he would hit as many home runs as he did last year. He's really kind of exceeded even my expectations. And as I said, I actually like the guy. The last couple of weeks, he's got 6 home runs, 17 RBIs, batting .391. And this is the second season now. Like I said, he exceeded my expectations last year. It looks like he's going to exceed them again this year. Is Jake Lamb now a top 10 or 12 type of guy in dynasty formats and keeper leagues and things like that? Is he getting to that point where we need to start to truly, truly buy into him?
I mean, overall, no. I don't think he's a top 10, top 12 overall player. He's a good player. I do wonder if the average is sustainable. He's batting .287 right now. You know, career is really close to .250. Batted .249 last year, even the good year he had. The power's legit. We all know. In Arizona, that ball flies out of that ballpark. He plays in a good lineup. I see no reason why he couldn't hit 35 home runs, assuming healthier. He played 151 games last year. He does that again. I think he's going to hit 32, 33, 34 home runs. So the power is legit. We want that. He has some speed, too. Wouldn't shock me if he stole double-digit bases here. Maybe it stops at 8-9. He's a valuable player. And I think, like you said, he's a better player than I expected him to be, but I'm not going to put him top 10, top 12. I'm drafting next year. I'm not drafting him in the first round.
What I actually meant was top 10 at the position. Because 2 or 3 years ago, before he hit the home runs last year, I'm not so sure he would have even been a top 12 third baseman. That's what I meant. Definitely, he's definitely not, you know, he's not better than Mookie Betts and those kinds of guys. Paul Goldschmidt, for example. But is he definitely going forward now absolutely a top 10 third baseman?
I don't see how he can't. I mean, third base is not weak, but it's not extremely strong either, where I could find 10 guys to take over him. I mean, listen, look at his numbers right now. Is he going to hit 30, let's say 30 home runs, just be nice. They're about 265, driving 95 runs, steal 10 bases. That's easy, top 10 at the position. Like I said, you're making an argument overall that he's, top 40, top 50 player overall. There are 9 other third basemen you're taking above him. I can't do that. So, yes, I would have him as easily top 10 and probably much closer to top 5 than top 10.
Another guy that's been – and in points leagues, I'm just looking at it real quickly. He's in the top 10 in overall points. Depending on, you know, every format's a little bit different, but if you use the generic format, at least this year so far, he's already got over 200 points, which makes him actually better than Freddie Freeman, who everyone is raving about, unfortunately injured. He's right below – actually, he's tied, in my league anyway, with Aaron Judge, who we've talked about a little bit. He's right there, not that far away from Joey Votto and Charlie Blackman, who are top 5 fantasy performers in points leagues at the moment. Let me give you a little bit of time to brag a little bit. I believe, if I remember correctly, when we used to do these shows a couple years ago, you were a big Mike Conforto guy. I was, I thought he'd be a major leaguer. I thought he'd be a full-time player. With some concerns because of his lefty splits, I was a little concerned that that may become a problem. I wasn't exactly sure, but I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt at least. But again, I wasn't excited about him. It's looking now with the mess that is New York right now, with him actually getting opportunities, that for some reason it didn't seem like Terry Collins wanted to give him those opportunities last year. He's starting to prove, I think, that maybe this guy could be a star, which I believe was your opinion. Give me your thoughts on Mr. Conforto.
Yeah, I've always been a Michael Conforto believer. The Mets got a gift from God when they were able to draft him. He fell because of who his agent was. They thought he was going to want too much money, but he was the best pure hitter in that draft. The Mets, how they've handled him has been pretty poor, to put it nicely. I think we all know. I understood last year. You're planning for a playoff spot. You can't let the young player go through rookie struggles. I get that. So maybe that's why you got a platoon. We can't play him against lefties. But there's no excuse this year. I mean, none. If you were so worried about Conforto, then you should have solved the problem of the extra outfielders during the offseason. You should have never qualified Duda. You should have just let him go and try and move one of the outfielders to first base. Conforto is your best natural hitter outside of Yoenis Cespedes. And, you know, you can make an argument that he's the best hitter overall there. Cespedes has more power. Conforto's going to be he's not going to be Mike Trout. He's not going to be Bryce. He's not going to be a superstar, but he's going to be a star. You know, this is not just the phase he's going through for the past month. This kid can hit. He's going to make the Mets very happy. You know, the fact that Terry Collins couldn't see this is baffling. But then again, pretty much everything the Mets do is baffling.
Yeah. Ownership on the field. I love to criticize the Mets. I think my criticism is relatively accurate in the sense that I think they should have been coming into this last year. I predicted they would miss the playoffs, and obviously they made it. But this year, I thought that they should make it. I didn't say it was an absolute lock. I wasn't willing to go out and say they wouldn't make it, but I did think that they should have done more because I thought they basically should be a playoff team this year, and it's not looking the best. It's not over, but it's not looking the best at the moment. But I thought they should have gone that one step further. They did sign some of their own players so that they could remain as good as they were last year. And with that young staff, that gives them the money to be able to do that. But I thought they should have gone another step further because once you become a playoff team, and I've bitched about this for years with you about the Yankees at the trade deadline about acquiring pitching. Once you're in a position where you are a playoff team, I think it's your responsibility to go out of your way to make yourself a favorite to win the World Series. Now, maybe not the number one favorite, but one of the two or three or four that say, you know what? There's no reason why that team can't beat so-and-so. So if the Cubs are the perennial number one pick going into this season, maybe they aren't now, but when going into the season, they were, you got to at least put yourself in a position where people would say, on paper at least, yeah, I think they can beat the Cubs. Not just anyone can beat anyone on any given day kind of thing, but when you match up the team to the team and the roster to the roster and the pitchers to the pitchers and so forth, that you say, you know what, it wouldn't be a major upset if they were to beat that. I thought that's what teams should be doing when they're a playoff team. They take that next step, become a favorite. That was my knock on the Mets this year. They did what they had to remain a playoff team, but they didn't give them to legitimately on paper say they are a favorite to win the World Series, along with the Cubs or whoever else you wanted to say did a great job. That was my knock on them. And this year, whether they win or lose it, it really has nothing to do with my opinion now, because injuries and things like that have really kind of derailed their season at the moment. But let me ask you about a couple other players before we get here. We're talking with George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. And I want to ask you real quickly about Aaron Judge. I like to look at dynasty leagues, because when you analyze players in dynasty league formats, you're basically saying, what kind of play do I think this guy is going to consistently be? But when you look at them in a yearly leagues, it's a snapshot. It's a quick, what is he going to keep doing this the rest of the year? Is he going to have trouble adjusting? And so it's a different way to analyze a player. Aaron Judge, I think, has now proven that in a dynasty format, obviously he's a guy you want to have. Could he be an MVP candidate for the years to come? That would be an that would exceed what I ever expected of him. But in yearly formats, as a rookie who has 15 home runs and is batting .315, how do you handle him in yearly leagues? Do you sell high, or because you think as a rookie he's going to slump a little? Can you not get the kind of value you need to make it? Or do you believe he's going to go on to hit 40 homers this year, and if he's going to do that, you probably have to keep him? If you're in a yearly format, how are you handling Aaron Judge? And if there are owners, especially Yankees fans, and I'm sure you come into a few of those in your home league, if they're just surging to the hoop to try to trade for Aaron Judge, how are you managing or handling, and what are you expecting at this point with what we're seeing from Aaron Judge? In points leagues, he's a top seven guy, and obviously 15 home runs, the guy's just been a beast.
Well, when it comes to Judge, anyone's tradable. Mike Trout is tradable if you can make the right offer. So if I own Aaron Judge, I'll certainly listen to any offers. The power's legit. Once again, 40 home runs should be well within his reach. He makes any kind of connection with ball on barrel, it's going away. You know, so that's not an issue there. I think the average is going to come down. Absolutely. You mentioned he's batting .315 now. So I think he'll end up being a .275 range. Wouldn't shock me if it comes down. Judge is, if you look at go through his career through the minor leagues, what he's done is it takes him time. He struggles at a level, then he conquers it. He's done this over and over again, almost every level. Last year, he struggled in the majors. This year, he seems to have conquered it. He's conquered it this season by realizing that he may have to swing early in the count. If that's when he's getting the fastball, he swings. Don't go 1-2 count, 0-2 count, where you know you're going to get that slide, you're going to get that curveball, a changeup, off the plate, and you're going to strike out. One thing I've noticed from watching him, he does not get the benefit of the calls from umpires. They're calling the same low strike on him that they would call to somebody half his size. So the umpires don't realize that he's 6'7". So he's definitely getting the low strike is something they're calling against him. I think that'll change in time once umpires get used to his size as well, and that should help him. Now, whether that's the second half of this year or next year, whatever it is, or maybe as we see in baseball, you have to prove yourself over and over again before the umpires give you the benefit of the doubt. It's what drives me insane about the strike zone, where the veteran pitcher will get a 20-inch zone, but the rookie pitcher gets a 12-inch zone. Yeah, it's just idiotic to me. But we do see this over and over again. I think Judge is legit. Bottom line is, he's legit. Is he tradable? Absolutely. Like I said, I think the average comes down. Power's legit. And from the looks of it, he's another guy who's going to steal double-digit bases. I understand we're talking 10-12 here. Not huge, but every little bit helps. So I'm not looking to move him. I don't think he's going to fall apart. But like I said, if someone wants to offer me a good deal for him, I'll trade him.
Yeah, I it's just difficult, in my opinion, to be able to trade him because he's been better than Chris Bryant, who is having a pretty nice season, 10 home runs, .293. He's been better than Daniel Murphy by pretty big, significant numbers. He's got 6 more home runs. You look at Anthony Rizzo. He's got 11 home runs. He's only batting .238, though. Would you trade Aaron Judge for Anthony Rizzo? Going into the season, obviously, those two wouldn't even be in the same conversation. Now, I could see an Aaron Judge owner, especially since he's an outfielder while Rizzo's a first baseman, I could see how the Judge owner would say, no, Anthony Rizzo is not enough. I want more. I want a 2-for-2 or a 3-for-3 type of trade to make up the difference because Judge is better. I can see that. But Rizzo has the history. He's in that lineup. I think everyone assumes he's going to get better. While you were talking about, you have to assume that while Judge may not collapse, he's probably going to regress a little bit. I find it difficult to find what would be a fair swap because someone's going to have to take on risk and probably lose the deal at the outset in the hope that they project him differently. I find Judge to be a very difficult guy to kind of to evaluate what you should expect. I mean, who's a player that you would say one for one is equal to what Judge will be the rest of the way? So rest of the season from today on, who's a player that you say one for one, that deal makes sense?
Well, listen, in trades like this, you mentioned Judge for Rizzo. I'm probably doing it. I mean, it depends on what I do. I need a first baseman. Do I have the extra outfield that I can give away? A lot of that comes into it. If you want to try and get more because Judge has got out to a hotter start than Rizzo, Rizzo did hit two home runs last night. Hey, God bless. Maybe it works out for you. But in a vacuum, if I'm drafting today, I'm drafting Rizzo above Judge, probably. I do tend to move outfields up in my rankings because generally we start five. Where first baseman, at most, you're going to have three on your starting your roster, first base, quarter infield, and utility. So I guess that would be a six outfield. So outfields are more valuable to me. But I think Rizzo's going to be fine. The weather in Chicago has been awful the early going of the season. They played a game last Friday. It was 90 degrees here, and they played a game where it looked like it was they were playing in December. Rainy. It's just been awful there. The weather hasn't taken off there. Too many times when we think Wrigley Field, we automatically think wind blowing out hitters' ballpark. It's really not like that. The wind blows in more often than not. But bottom line is I think Rizzo will be fine. If I'm drafting today, I'm probably drafting Rizzo above Judge here. So I would take that trade one-on-one, assuming I didn't have a good first baseman.
And that's the one position where I usually end up being awful. I have Mark Reynolds in a few leagues. I end up putting guys who have multiple position eligibility, like Marwin Gonzalez. I even have him in a couple leagues. I don't spend at first base. I don't spend at catcher. And I usually don't spend at closer. That's sort of my philosophy on things. So oftentimes, I don't have a good first baseman. And I think sometimes you can luck into them. If you're going to luck into a value at a position, I think oftentimes you might be able to find it at first base, except they're obviously one-dimensional kinds of guys. I end up with I have Chris Carter in that dynasty league I talked to you about. I don't love having him as my first baseman, but the fact is he does provide value. I guess the one other aspect would be outfielders. Sometimes you can find a little bit of pop, or you can find some stolen bases, and there's value there. And there are so many of them. So I guess you can find some pretty decent waiver wire guys in the outfield position. One last play I want to ask you before I want to just get your thoughts in general on guys. I've never been a JD Martinez guy. I've just never bought in. Obviously had a great season last year. Just my original opinion was not all that high on him. He's been producing. He's on fire since he's come back from injury. So I probably should be finally coming around on him, but I never have, and I don't know if I ever will. Maybe I'm just too stubborn. What's your take on a JT Martinez? JD. Did we lose him? Sometimes we have these technical difficulties here, so.
I'm back. I think I'm back.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you hear what I said about me?
You and I are alike on JD Martinez. I've never really bought in either. You know, I don't know why, because the numbers have been great. 22-68 last year and only played 120 games. 38-102 the year before that. I mean, and you said it. Since coming back from the foot injury, he's been playing like a house on fire. My God. He's trying to make up for that 6 weeks. He missed all in one week. He's already got 6 home runs, 12 RBIs, batting .364. My one worry about Martinez is this. They can't rest him by giving him a day off in the DH spot. Now with Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera there, who are dealing with their own issues, so he's going to have to play the outfield. That's a lot of, push-offs from a stationary start to go get that fly ball in the gap. Batting is the same thing. Got to push-off. I wonder if that injury reoccurs at some point this season. Like I said, you can't hide him in the DH. You can't give him that extra day. The half day off. So that worries me somewhat here. But as I said, the power was legit. I guess maybe the Tigers also wanted to move him in the offseason. They were trying to trade him. That might be because of fiscal constraints or maybe because they had issues in other positions, needed pitching and thought they had enough outfields, whatever it might be. That concerned me as well, how he would play in another lineup. Although you would think in a different ballpark, he might even have more power there. But bottom line is he's legit. When he's playing and when he's healthy, he produces.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever buy into him. I probably should. I agree with you. I think I should be thinking what you're thinking, and I just have to force myself to get there. It's like guacamole and definitely mushrooms. I'm just never going to believe that those things are good, even if somehow scientists and everybody proves that they're fantastic. I just don't – he may be one of those players I just can never quite get there. Last player, because I know you're a fan and he's been on a little bit of a hot streak the last couple weeks, whereas I've been a guy who said he was regressing for years, literally. Jose Bautista, 5 home runs, .413 batting average over the last couple weeks. He's a guy that's injured a lot. As I said, I've been waiting for a regression for years, and I think he's regressed a little bit, but a full-on collapse hasn't happened yet, so I guess I'm partially right and partially wrong, but you've been a big Bautista guy for years now. Is he a buy-low guy right now, or is this a small sample-size spurt, and he's going to go back to hitting .225 or get injured again? Injuries have definitely been a problem with him recently.
Well, the buy-low time is over. All right, you had that chance. That's gone. The last 30 games, I mean, he's batting .314, 7 home runs, 19 ribbies. I mean, if you could buy low on him, God bless you. Maybe someone will give him up, but I don't think you can. He's just been too hot. April, he was awful. May's been great. I mean, well, which one do we believe in here? Some people thought that he was going to have a big season this year because he's going to want to stick it to everybody because no one would give him that big free agent deal he wanted. So he's going to come out angry. Well, it didn't work so much in April. It is working in May. He has to guess more, or I guess guess more is the right term there, because he has to cheat to catch up to the fastball now. So if you have good off-speed stuff, you can catch him guessing. You're going to make him look foolish. But if he guesses right, he's going to hit it a long way. The average is never going to come back to what it used to be. I mean, I think the power is still going to be legit. I think he still might hit 30 home runs, but it's going to come with a 240, maybe 250, 255 average there. Can you afford that hit? You know, so that's where it comes down to me. What does your team need? Do you need the power? Can you afford the average? If you can, then I'm good with Bautista here. I'm not as big a fan as I was. I didn't draft him in any leagues this year, Chris, because I thought that he might have some problems getting old there. Don't like the fact that he has to cheat and all that. And I didn't want the average hit here. And because if I'm going to take an average hit, I pretty much want 30-plus home runs. And I wasn't positive Bautista would be able to give it to me anymore. So that was my issue there. It looks like he is going to be able to give you that 30 home run. So I'm on board here. But like I said, buy low, yes. But you ask me to pay, I'm certainly not paying overpriced. Even paying even is probably not something I'm going to be interested in.
Yeah, when I say buy low, like you said, he's not somebody who's new to a hot streak. So everyone's aware now that he's finally on a roll. I guess my buy low theory, and sometimes maybe I overthink this and think a guy's a buy low when actually he's a sell high. Sometimes that happens because I project going forward and say he should be an affordable guy. And because he's on a hot streak, he's actually not. That happens from time to time, or at least it does to me. So interpreting what other people think sometimes can come as a mistake. That's really where I was thinking of the buy low is, he's been so good now, but he can't keep doing this. Is he going to slump again, and other people are going to be afraid that he's going to slump, and so therefore they'll give you an affordable price or something? That's kind of the way I was thinking, because obviously anyone paying attention is fully aware that he's been on a hot streak. I mean, 5 home runs, batting over .400 over a 2-week period. Everybody knows this guy's – and plus he had the bat flip and caused a brawl, which he always seems to do. I may have an alternative, subconscious thing with him too, because I traded for him when he was a second baseman with the Pirates. He had that one good power year as a second baseman, and he was nothing before that. He had one good year, and I don't know, the owner just conned me. He convinced me to trade my number one amateur draft. It's a dynasty league with prospects. I had the number 2 overall amateur draft pick that year, and I needed a second baseman, and I needed some power. And I said, Bautista, this guy's going to be my power-hitting second baseman for the next 5 years. So he somehow conned me into giving him the number 2 overall amateur draft selection in the next year's prospect draft. And that pick turned out to be Clayton Kershaw. So I sort of traded Clayton Kershaw, though you had to wait a few years for him to develop. But nonetheless, what turned out to be Clayton Kershaw for Jose Bautista, who went on to stink for the next like 3 or 4 years. And then he reemerged off the waiver wire as a power hitting outfielder / third baseman in Toronto, and he became the player that he is today. But anyone who remembers him playing the infield with the Pirates, he had a nice season, but he wasn't the Bautista he is now. And so that trade lives in infamy in my league and for myself, and I think maybe that's why I'm just hating on him. Even though I don't intend to, maybe that's why I do. Talking with George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com. If you want to read him, obviously head on over to RotoExperts.com, or you can follow him on Twitter at George Kurtz. George, real quickly, I asked you this off the air. I want to get a real quick answer before we go to your closer report. I've got an owner, a commissioner, who wants to change some scoring categories in my fantasy league. And he doesn't like ERA anymore because it's somewhat team dependent. You know, pitchers with good defense benefit, sometimes earned runs or luck. You can have a whip, which I think better represents how a pitcher performs. You can have a really good whip and a really bad ERA. And so he wants to get rid of ERA, and he wants to add some kind of advanced metric that more narrowly focuses an actual pitcher's performance. But this is a weekly league and a dynasty league and a head-to-head league, so it's not rotisserie. It's difficult to use an advanced metric, I think, in those kinds of formats, but he's determined to do this. Do you know of any advanced metric, you know, XFIP, FIP, ERA plus, or something, that better focuses on just the pitcher, accurately kind of defines whether he performed good or bad in any given format, but can be used realistically in a seven-day period, a weekly lineup kind of league? That's my problem. There are lots of interesting categories, but you got to do it in rotisserie where the sample size gets big enough where it actually is a telling stat. Do you know any that would work as far as a weekly lineup goes? And I can recommend to him, because right now he's thinking about using holds, and you know how much I hate those. I don't want to find anything that can get rid of holds as a possible alternative to a meaningful category.
Yeah, I know you don't like holds. I actually don't mind holds. I like the fact that it opens up more of a player pool, so I think it's more strategy. I dislike leagues that have saves and holds as one category, because in my mind, as you and I have discussed, well, then you don't need to draft a closer. You just wait till the end here. They're all the same now. So I don't like that. ERAs, in my mind, is close to a joke as well, because is there any such thing as an error anymore? I mean, really, is there? I mean, I think official scoring is an absolute joke in Major League Baseball. Unless the ball's an 88 hopper hit right at you, or you throw the ball into the 38th row, you're not getting an error. I mean, really, these fielders aren't expected to catch anything anymore. It's in my mind, it's terrible. Because back in, 20, 30 years ago, 70s and 80s, when I first started watching baseball, errors were errors. You're a professional ball player. As you were, the ball's hit right at you, or one step to your left or right, and you don't catch it, that's an error. You know, so if they did this official scoring back then like they do now, a lot of averages would be a little higher here. So I hate it. Personally, I think there should be a fifth umpire, in a booth somewhere. He's the one that does the instant replay, and he's also the one that does the official scoring. That's what I would prefer there. This way he's neutral, not somebody the team hires from the local newspaper, whatever the hell they do. Makes me mad. But as for your question, as far as a category you could throw in there, the first one that comes to mind is BABIP, batting average on balls in play. I think that might be an interesting one to throw as a pitching category for a weekly league. That's where you get a better idea here. Walk-to-strikeout ratio, I should say. Another one you could think about using. I mean, listen, there's 1,000 sabermetric categories, advanced stats now you could use. You know, it's not something I had a lot of time to think about here, but those are the two that came to mind. Probably that's fair, because you have to remember, I don't want to get a stat that just gives strikeouts the extra benefit. Strikeouts is already a category, so I don't want something like contact rate or strikeout rate. That doesn't make any sense. You also have to worry about whip. We already have walks, hits, innings, pitches, so I don't want like a walk rate or anything like that. So it's tough there to get a completely separate category that is fair for all the pitchers. That's why with some leagues, when they go to 6x6, 7x7, 8x8, a lot of the categories they add just help the power hitters. All of a sudden you're adding slugging percentage or OPS. That's just another way of saying home runs. So you have to be very careful. Yeah, that's my biggest worry about here. I think BABIP might be the way I'd go about it.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I hadn't thought of that. I mean, we looked at the advanced metrics ones, but one of the problems I think is that when you have 5 starting pitchers and 3 relievers, we have 8 pitchers total, 5 starters, 3 relievers. Last week, I only had 39 innings pitched. Now, I lost to a guy who had 62, so there's a pretty significant movement there, but still, 60 innings and trying to use a FIP or XFIP or ERA plus or something like that. The sample size is so small. One of the things he did want to do was the walk to K ratio or the K per nine ratio. But when you have 40 innings or 45 innings pitched, I mean, if you pitch 1 inning less or 2 innings less than you, for some reason you go 4 1/3 rather than 6, all of a sudden that extra inning and a third or 2 innings, 1 additional walk or 2 additional walks or 1 or 2 less Ks, that small little difference from what a guy normally does versus what he does that week can be drastically altering the ratio. That's my problem, is the sample size in a weekly, it makes it problematic. That's one of my problems with some of these advanced metrics. They do their best to try to narrow down exactly whether a pitcher is good or not, but with the small sample sizes, to me, where the problem with these categories comes.
Listen, every category you find, you're going to be able to pick out the good and the bad. It's going to be difficult to find a perfect one that makes sense here. I'm not a traditional guy when it comes to fantasy. I do think there's some categories you should get rid of. I'd like to get rid of average. I think that's kind of a worthless category, because that's not that important. If you're not scoring runs or not driving in runs, then the fact that you just got a hit means nothing to me. You know, so I would like to get rid of that. I think the on-base percentage is more important. This way it includes walks there. That's another category I like to use. But, you know, it's hard to get everyone to agree. That's going to be the most difficult thing in your league. You know, because it gets, 10, 12 guys, 16 to agree. You know, I guess you're going to go to a vote. You're going to go to a majority, and whatever wins, wins. But you're going to get people who are upset about it the way it is. But it's a first. I got to tell you, it's the first time anyone's ever asked me about a sabermetric category in a fantasy league. Yeah, so I don't know. I certainly don't know any answer. I don't know the perfect answer. It's something I'm actually interested in and will ask around to see if anybody else has some ideas. But nothing really perfect comes to mind.
The one thing I would say about BABIP, and then we'll move on to your closer report, is that there's some flukiness and luck to ERA because, you know, it relies on defense, and sometimes a ball finds its way, a ball finds its way into the field and gets the base hit and a run scores. Sometimes that's not the best way to determine skill or performance. That's one of the problems I think he has with ERA. BABIP is kind of the same way. You know, sometimes there's some flukes, and sometimes there you get lucky because maybe guys are torching the ball. You know, you look at exit velocity, and the guy is really having guys rip balls off of them, but they're just going at everybody. You know, they're hitting at 150 miles an hour, but it's right at the third baseman, and it doesn't break his glove. You know, that would be one of my problems with BABIP. I agree with you with batting average when it comes to, is it a meaningless stat in baseball? I wouldn't go as far as saying meaningless, but absolutely it's depleted significantly. But I don't mind it as a category for fantasy because it's a skill. I like stolen bases. There are a lot of people out there, a lot of analysts who don't believe that stolen bases actually help teams win very much. You know, I've been of the belief for multiple years now where I heard that if you steal at least a success rate of at least 70%, then it makes it worth your while for a guy to attempt to steal. If you don't succeed at that kind of percentage, then you're actually hurting your team more than helping if you steal bases. But even when you do steal those bases, you get that extra base, so you turn a single essentially into double. I understand that. I'm not a moron. But it doesn't guarantee that you're going to end up scoring runs either. So, and there is an impact on the following batter of you being on first base and stealing a base. So the value of stolen bases in real baseball is down too, but you can't deny that it is a valuable skill. It is a skill. And that's what fantasy is about, is identifying skills, projecting players' skills, how well they can do them, and then determining where they should be drafted and how you're going to put your team together to fill those categories of those skills. And I do think batting average is a skill. And if you look at it really, it's a skill that's actually depleted. There are nowhere near as many players that hit for a good average than used to. So you could make an argument that a guy who hits for high batting average is kind of like a Billy Hamilton who can steal 65 bases. Nobody steals 60 bases anymore. You find a guy who can hit 320 like Xander Bogaerts. Again, he's a limited player because, like you said, batting average doesn't necessarily score a lot of runs, doesn't necessarily knock in any runs, doesn't help you in home runs and all those things, and it doesn't even necessarily guarantee a good on-base percentage because often if you don't walk, even if you have a high batting average, you don't necessarily end up with a really good OBP. But that is a skill. That's why I think batting average is a solid fantasy category. If we're talking just baseball, I don't want to hear an analyst quoting me batting average as a significant defense of a player, for example, or necessarily a significant criticism. I want you to look at the more advanced stats and look at least that on-base percentage for those. Because from a baseball perspective, I agree with you. Batting average is not an overly informative, helpful category from that. Because, again, you can hit – you know, Xander Bogaerts doesn't have a home run this year, and he only has like 3 or 4 or 8 or 8 doubles. You know, he's not a great player right now, even though he's batting over 300. And for all I know, he might end up winning the batting title this year. But you got to hit for some power, and so I agree with you in that format and in that perspective. But talking with George Kurtz, we're going to get this closer report done. We've kept him a long time. We got Brandon Woodsy Williams coming up. George, I just saw a report that the Nats have announced who their closer is. It's a little bit of a carousel there. Give us your closer report for this week.
Yeah, the Nats are certainly on it. That Dusty Baker has finally made it official. We've sort of been hinting at this, and by hinting, I mean I've been outright saying it for about 2 weeks now, at least 2 closer reports, to go out and pick up Dakota Glover. I expected that he would be named the full-time closer there. Listen, Sean Kelly hasn't pitched well. They've been wary about him all season long that he can't night, except that 3 days in a row, so that's why they want to name him the closer. Training's been a train wreck. Matt Albers really doesn't have the stuff to be a closer. So Cody Glover sort of got it by default, but he's also been one of their better relievers, so he certainly deserved the job. That being said, I fully expect the Nationals to eventually make a trade for a closer. you know, that's Robertson, Cologne, Ramos, whoever it might be, I expect them to trade for a more reliable one because this team expects to be playing deep into October, maybe even November. So they're going to want to have somebody they trust there. But I think you're going to get somebody for at least a couple of months. So that's good enough because Washington will have a lot of closing opportunities there. So Glover is certainly somebody you want. You mentioned Edwin Diaz in the beginning of the show. Scott Service came out and said that he likes the way Diaz is pitching. He wants Diaz to have one more clean outing before he puts him in the back in the closer role. Technically, that clean outing came yesterday. You know, so does that mean he's back? Does that mean he's not back? Who knows? Seattle's playing like a horrendous team anyway. Maybe they won't get too many closing opportunities. But I expect that he gets that job back shortly, if not the next chance, certainly certainly soon after that. But like I said, Seattle's been just a terrible team there. But still, I want Diaz. Bedrosian is throwing again. He should be back soon for Los Angeles. Who knows what Mike Socha is going to do with him. He seems to have been not the biggest supporter of Bedrosian. You know, he's kept putting Street in or Bailey or anybody else he could find there. Norris, I mean, if you believe in, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, maybe Bedrosian doesn't get the job back. Norris has pitched well in the closing role. He saved, when I wrote the report, it was 9 out of 11 opportunities. ERA and WHIP were fine. Maybe because of all the injuries that Bedrosian gets, you know, Norris keeps the job there. So I would automatically assume he gets back the closing job there. Bottom line is we don't know. And we keep hearing over and over again, Detroit wants K-Rod to get the closing job back, if only because they just feel that the bullpen works better with Justin Wilson, you know, being able to get that lefty out in the eighth or the seventh inning whenever the need arises. I get that. And I think that's eventually they're going to give K-Rod another shot. But I also think K-Rod is going to fail once again. The main reason is, listen, his fastball doesn't touch 90, so it's barely getting a speeding ticket in some states. He's hovering around 88. His changeup is hovering around 82, 83. The difference is just not enough. You know, major league hitters we've seen all season are going to crush this. So even if K-Rod gets the job back, I am not rushing to go put him back on my fantasy team.
No, I mean, I knew he was going to have the closer role in Detroit entering the season, but I didn't even really consider drafting him. You know, as you said, a third to as many as half of closers lose their jobs. You know, if K-Rod fell far enough in the drafts, I would have probably taken him eventually, but he just didn't fall far enough. I mean, it was not like people paid for him at a real price, but I really needed him to fall a long way, and he didn't fall long enough for me. I mean, what shocked me most in draft season the most, at least at the closer position, was Greg Holland. I thought that he was absolutely going to be the Rockies' closer, but it seemed like people wanted to talk about how there were multiples of options there. I never had any thought that it wouldn't be Holland, and now Holland is having a monster year, and he was going extremely, extremely late in drafts. That, to me, at the closer position, was one of the bigger surprises.
Yeah, I remember Holland. I was wary about him as well. He's coming off the injury here. They didn't name him the closer until very, very late. So I do understand people not drafting him the way he was. He is having a fantastic season. I mean, he looks great out there. And the Rockies are playing so well that he's not even trade fodder. You know, I mean, they're not going to trade this. They're 31-17 or something silly like that. No, I think the Rockies are regressed. They generally do year after year after year. They fall apart in August, September. You know, the pitching just wears down here. But it's good to see. But like I said, more importantly, Holland may not be dealt. And I don't think that's a bad thing either. If the Rockies keep playing anywhere near as well, the save opportunities will be there. That's all we care about. And Holland looks like it looks back to being the pitcher he used.
What closers do you have the most concerns about? If you were to predict two or three guys that are the next to lose their job, who are those guys and who replaces them?
But they're always, I mean, listen, when you look at closers, 30 teams, literally half of them, the closers so-so. You know, and that's just the way it is. Fernando Rodney has been really terrible all season long, but Arizona has nobody else, so he keeps the job. I think Atlanta trades Jim Johnson. And I think wherever Jim Johnson goes, he won't be the closer. So I think that's an issue there. Other closers that I'm worried about, David Robinson, I think, gets traded, but I think he'll be a closer wherever he goes, so I'm not worried there. I already mentioned Justin Wilson. Ken Giles has been up and down, but I think he keeps the job there. Herrera could be traded from KC, but once again, I expect him to be the closer wherever he goes. Ramos, sort of the same deal here. Kinsler, I don't know how he does it, Chris. I mean, literally, he's another guy who doesn't throw hard at all. At one point, I think he had more saves than strikeouts, which is an incredible stat, but he's someone I might worry about a little bit, especially for how well Minnesota is playing. Maybe eventually they try and go out and acquire an established closer. I doubt it, but maybe. Addison Reed, another person that I might worry about a little bit, Hector Neris with Philadelphia, although once again, they should be playing for the future more than the time being. Sung Hwan Ho has sort of stabilized himself. He was someone a couple of weeks ago we were concerned about, but now he's pitching well again, where I'm not concerned about him. There's some noise that San Fran could be looking to move Mark Melancon after just signing him to the big four-year, $62 million deal, but I expect him to be a closer wherever he ends up as well. Same with Alex Colom. And that's it. I don't think anybody else is going to lose their job immediately that we haven't talked about yet. Just guys that weren't that great to begin with that no one should be shocked about if that does happen.
I believe in dynasty leagues, especially in head-to-head formats. I actually believe the closers have value, more value in those leagues. Because if you have a good team and you're going for a title, you pay for the closers, or you pay for anybody who makes you significantly better in any one position. You pay the legit price. I don't pay for first baseman in either league, and yet I paid a significant prospect price to add Paul Goldschmidt. Now, granted, Paul Goldschmidt's a superstar. So adding a guy like that doesn't make sense no matter what situation you're in. My point being, I usually don't pay or spend on first base, but in dynasty leagues, I was willing to for Goldschmidt. Again, I'm the same opinion of closers. I went out and made a pretty big trade a few years back, traded Anthony Rendon as well as a few other players, and Rendon was actually good then, for Craig Kimbrell and Aroldis Chapman because I was a contender. I won the title in that league last year, so I think the closers are worth paying for in dynasty formats, but you have to know you're getting a star. That's my question. Ken Giles in Houston. Houston looks like one of, if not the best teams in baseball. Ken Giles looks like a beast right now. Is this guy getting into that situation where he is a stud, lockdown monster kind of guy? How good is Ken Giles? And would you pay a legit price in a dynasty format if you believe, like I do, that there is advanced or increased value for closers in that format? What's your thoughts on Giles?
I mean, Giles has been being acquired by Houston. You know, last year he had the old the cookie year, the Oreo cookie year. He was terrible at the beginning, terrible at the end, very good in the middle. You know, this year he's been up and down. He's been mostly solid, but we've also seen Houston, also they'll pitch him in the seventh inning out of nowhere. You're like, well, what's going on here? Did he just lose a job? And it's like, no, just wanted to give him some work here. But they've done this three or four times. It's just strange. You don't see that. I guess bottom line is if you're asking me, I'd rather acquire him than deal him. Do I think he's a top five closer? No, but I do think he's top 10, and we all know Houston's a very good team. I think Houston will look to make some upgrades by the deadline, but not at closer. So I think Giles' job is safe, but I wouldn't put him as a mortal lock. He's not Jansen, Chapman, Kimbrell, someone who you know has no chance of losing the job.
Yeah, I remember back in the day I played in a league called Stats BB, back when America Online was how I got online, and you had to pay for minutes and all those things. It was Mariano Rivera's first season. I think he blew like three – it was right after John – they let John Wetland go. They asserted Mariano Rivera as the man in the ninth rather than in the eighth. And he blew, I think, three or four of his first five attempts, and somebody panicked. And I went out and traded for Rivera, and, you know, the story is what it is now. But I wonder about that with some guys. George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. George, I really appreciate the time. I'll try to get you down to the 20 to 25 minutes that we plan to, but once again, I always blame you because you bring pretty interesting information. So thanks for putting in that extra couple minutes here, and be good this weekend, and I look forward to talking to you next Thursday and hopefully over the weekend as well.
Take care, Chris. You have a good weekend.
All right. That's George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com here on a podcast to be named later. I am your long-winded co-host here, Chris Mitchell, if you want to follow me on Twitter. At CJMitch73. If you want to follow the podcast on Facebook or just talk sports with us on Facebook, we're more than happy to waste our time talking sports rather than actually spend it being productive in the workplace. That Facebook group is a podcast to be named later. I also have a fantasy site Facebook group called the RotoExperts.com Fantasy Sports Show page. Obviously, I am associated with RotoExperts.com because I write over there. And actually had an article posted yesterday on recent prospect promotions. I write up a report and give you some predictions on how valuable these guys can be. The headline's a little bit deceptive because it basically says none of the recent guys that have been promoted have any value, and there is a limited value. I wrote about Ian Happ, Bradley Zimmer, Magner, Sierra, and there was one other one. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But the only one I thought had good fantasy value going forward was Bradley Zimmer, but the headline suggests that I didn't think any of them did. So I'm correcting that. But if you want to head on, if you go over to my Twitter feed, you'll see it anyway. But if you want to head over to rotoexperts.com to read it, I talk about some of the recent prospect promotions and what their possible contributions will be and what to expect and what their skill set is compared to what their opportunity is going to be in 2017. And I give you an overall evaluation of what those guys are worth. But right now, let's go to Brandon C. Williams, who's been very patient with us. Brandon, I appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully you listened to a little bit of that talk with George. I'm sorry that I delayed so long, but thanks for being patient and sticking with us there, buddy.
Oh, no problem. You've been long-winded for years. I just listened to your message. You've been long-winded for years, so I'm probably the last person you should be apologizing to in regards to that. So, no, not a problem. Always great to listen to, George. Big insight on the closer situation. And touching on one thing that he talked about with the Rockies, I think this team is actually going to stay in the thick of things. Yeah, they're 31-17 right now. They've got the best road record in the National League at this point. Pitching might be a question, but you have to think that, this team really isn't hitting right now, at its full potential. They got to have a story off the disabled list earlier this week. Carlos Gonzalez, starting to warm up just a bit. So you also have to add that the fact that their staff ace, John Gray, has been on the disabled list for more than a month. He isn't expected back until the middle of June, and by that time, when he's ready, you'd have to figure that some of those younger arms are going to be a little more seasoned. And when you add the fact that you've got a Sutton stopper now in Greg Holland, I think this Rockies team stays in it. I think the one thing that people, underestimate is the impact that Bud Black can have on a pitching staff. And when he got that job, I talked to a friend out in Colorado, and I told him, when Black, with the hiring of Black, don't be too surprised if this pitching is better than expected come 2017. And so far, he's proven me right.
Yeah, that's actually one of the articles that I didn't get the chance to write for the draft kit was that I was high on Tyler Anderson and John Gray going into this year. A little less so on Tyler Anderson because he didn't come up through the minors as a highly touted prospect, so I was a little reluctant to jump on his bandwagon quite as much. But the interesting thing I found about 2016 for those two guys was that they were actually better in Coors Field than they were on the road, and I don't think anyone would ever believe that. In my analysis of it, and it's mostly a guess, I didn't look into the details of it or call medical doctors and things like that, but my kind of read on that was that pitching in Coors Field is difficult because the ball flies out of there and pop-outs turn into home runs, and that's unfortunate, and the breaking balls don't break as much, so your stuff just isn't as good in Coors Field, and then some balls just get out of the park that don't deserve to. So there's definitely some disadvantages while you're pitching in Coors. But what I took away from the fact that those two guys were better on the road is that the biggest problem in Coors Field isn't pitching in Coors Field. If you can get it done and keep the ball down and live on sinkers and fastballs, and Jonathan Gray can kind of do that. But the wear and tear on a pitcher's body of pitching in the high elevation, that hurts them as they make their next start or their next couple starts. Not only do they have to travel, which can beat up on a guy's body, but they have to deal with the being worn out from pitching in Coors Field. So then all of a sudden they have a start on the road, and they're dealing with all of those things that beat up on them, and they end up pitching worse. That was my evaluation of it. So I was high on Jonathan Gray coming into this season, and George talked about how the Rockies have always maybe had decent seasons at the beginning, but they eventually come back to the pack and collapse. That would have been my one argument, is that Jonathan Gray is going to be relaxed. He's going to be rested. And he won't have used as many bullets as he would have in previous years. So maybe he can help them avoid a little bit of a slump or a second half correction sort of thing. So, and that would be my argument against the Rockies kind of falling apart here, is that when they get Jonathan Gray back, they get their best pitcher back. And as I said, I'm high on him. I traded for him in Dynasty League. I believe it. I actually believe in this guy. So it's interesting that we talk about them a little bit. Let me ask you real quickly. You mentioned Carlos Gonzalez. I haven't been a Carlos Gonzalez guy for quite some time. Who are the hot and cold players that you're big on right now? We've got a lot of guys. We've got Jake Lamb, who's having a great season. We've got Jose Bautista, who's at least having a great couple of weeks. Corey Dickerson has made himself relevant in leagues. Michael Conforto is emerging. There's a lot of guys out there doing pretty well. Matt Adams just got an opportunity, and he's taking advantage of it in Atlanta. Who are some hot and cold players that you like in fantasy right now?
You look at guys right now that are hot. I think one guy that's being overlooked is Justin Bour, first baseman of the Marlins. He has been knocking the cover off of the ball for most of the month of May. Yo, and this is the guy that, you know, probably was in about maybe 20-25% of fantasy leagues going into the start of the season. But right now he's hit .279, 12 homers, 30 RBI. And in his last seven games, he's got to hit at least two of them. He had a four-hit game on the 23rd against the A's. And that was on Tuesday. A four-hit game included a home run, two RBI. So he's been he's been hitting the heck out of the ball and has really put himself out there to the point where he's owned it now nearly 60% of leagues. I think he can continue to hit the ball well. The Marlins do a good job of limiting him against left-handers. And as long as he's able to do that, I think that he is going to be in very good shape. I think another guy, you know, you mentioned the fact that, you know, Jose Bautista is starting to hit the ball a bit. He homered on Wednesday, his eighth of the season, and it's starting to look like the Blue Jays are getting their offense back a bit. I don't want to rush into judgment or anything like that, but, you know, with Bautista getting back, you know, you've got the strong start from Justin Smoke at first base this season. They're hoping to get Tulowitzki back by the end of the month, and whatever kind of production that you can get out of him is only going to enhance that lineup a bit more. Kevin Pillar is hitting the ball pretty well right now. He homered on Wednesday. Here's a guy that, you know, you always envision as maybe being a 10 or 15 home run guy. He's on the pace right now to where he could probably flirt more closer to 20 home runs than he will be at 15. So he's a guy that you probably want to grab onto in cooling off a bit. You know, guys that are falling off, you know, right now, one of the guys that, you know, you'll probably start looking at is Yonder Alonso. You know, he got hot and is hit 13 home runs. Where the heck that came from is beyond me. But Alonso does have a history of wrist injuries, and you also have to buy in the fact that, you know, eventually that power is going to peter out. This is a guy that has never been known for being a strong home run hitter, and he's really, you know, gone above expectations right now. If you look at his numbers at this point, they've been fairly impressive for the most part. It's part of the reason why he's owned in 71% of most leagues right now. You know, .275, 13 home runs, 30 RBI, and this is something from a guy that, you know, if you look at his career, coming up, a lot of people thought he'd be a 20 to 25 home run guy, and the power never materialized. You know, he has hit his career high right now. This is a guy that, you know, going into the season, never hit more than 9 home runs in a year, and he did that in 2012 at 549 at-bats. Right now with 120 at-bats, so maybe it could be a case that, you know, at age 30, you know, the experience and the discipline at the plate might come together, but I'm not going to buy into it because he does have a history of wrist injuries. He's dealing with one right now. He's probably a guy that you probably go ahead and sell high if you can at this point. One of the guys that, you know, has really struggled this season is Udabel Herrera. I was very impressed when I saw out of him in 2015. And, you know, when I looked at him, I thought that this was a guy that, you know, kind of reminded me of the late Tony Phillips, a guy that, you know, can do a lot of things at the plate. He's not going to get you 20 home runs or get you maybe 15 or so. He's not going to be a blistering stolen base guy, but he'll maybe give you 20 to 25. That's what he did last year. Right now, .232, 3 home runs, just 15 runs, or 4 stolen bases. I think that, you know, it's kind of the case with the Phillies for the most part. I think a lot of people kind of overestimated the production that you were going to get out of those guys, you know, based off of some of the things that they did last year and some of the potential that they had this year, and you're just not getting that. You know, you even look at Tommy Joseph. He's been hitting the ball fairly well late, but when you've got Rhys Hopkins down in AAA just tearing the cover off of the ball right now, he's probably another 1-for-20 slump away from ending up losing his job. You know, right now, you know, there are also a handful of guys that, you know, have to throw your hands up and give up on. I think Jock Peterson is one of those guys. You know, I thought that there was some potential for a breakout with him this season. He got injured earlier in the season. He's only hitting .200, 2 homers, 11 RBI. I think that this is a guy you could probably, you know, move away from at this point. He's dealing with a strained neck at this point, so he's also someone that you might want to shy away from. Manny Margot I know that you're big on him. I like the guy as well. He came out hitting strong, you know, the first part of April. He's kind of tilted up a bit in May. I know he's dealing with a calf injury. 259, 4 home runs, 5 RBI. You know, I wouldn't completely give up on him if I'm in a deeper league. But if you're in a more standard league where you can find a guy that can give you a little more production, it might be, you know, you might want to consider moving him. But then again, you know, in a keeper dynasty, you're certainly not giving up on a guy who's only 22 and has that kind of ridiculous upside. You know, at this point, there are a handful of arms that had strong starts that are starting to fall off. Chase Anderson in Milwaukee, Trevor Cahill in San Diego, Luis Perdomo also in San Diego. Another guy that, you know, kind of got solid for a bit. You know, Jose Arena out in Miami. Those are guys that, you know, really had strong and decent starts or pitching above their heads. Now the reality is starting to kick in. Another guy that you'll want to try to move away from, Hector Santiago, had a strong start in Minnesota. Right now, you know, I think the only reliable starters in that rotation in Minnesota, obviously, is Irvin Santana, who's been pitching lights out all year. And Jose Berrios, you know, last year came up, was extended batting practice anytime he got a start, made some adjustments. This year, you know, one of those post-hype guys that has really got hot, you know, got his third win this season earlier in the week. To me, I think there might be some sell high potential on him because obviously he's not going to stay at hot at that point, at this point. But I do think that, you know, he's going to establish himself and become a solid anchor into that Twins rotation. And when you look at a surprising team, it's got to make you wonder, kind of like what George touched on, you know, is this a Twins team that suddenly thinks that, you know, if they continue playing the way they are come July, you know, instead of looking at Brandon Kinsler as your closer, maybe you start looking out and saying, hey, let's roll the dice and maybe go out and go get a David Robertson.
Yeah, the Twins are interesting. Again, 2 years ago, they were a surprisingly competitive team. Last year, they were a surprisingly disastrous team. And now this year, they're a surprising AL Central leader. A lot of young talent there, and the pitching is doing enough to keep them not only in it, but ahead of it. So it's definitely an interesting squad. We're talking with Brandon C. Williams from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him over at Twitter, at BCWilliams71. Brandon, you're down in Texas, and I've been frustrated with the way the Rangers have handled this guy, Joey Gallo. The guy has monstrous power. He also strikes out a ton. So I can understand the frustration, but I think some teams, you just got to look at a guy's skill set and say, look, this is what he is. We're going to accept the good and be happy about it, and then we're just going to grin and bear the bad. And obviously Gallo has both of those. But it seems like they wanted him to change in order to give him an opportunity. So they go out and they say, okay, we're going to start Dino with Shields in the outfield. We're going to sign Mike Napoli. We're going to sign Carlos Gomez. We still have Shin-Soo Chu. Nomar Mazzaro is our future out there as well. So they've still got Jurickson Profar where they're trying to find what he is and what he's going to be, if anything. And obviously he's not having a good year right now. But they just made it even more impossible for Joey Gallo to get an opportunity there. And I never quite understood that. Again, I understand that they don't like the strikeouts. They don't like the fact that he's batting 195 right now. But they praised his athleticism. They praised his defensive versatility. They seem to believe, and maybe it was just talk, that he could play possibly the outfield, that he could handle first base, that if Adrian Beltre got hurt, obviously he could handle third base. So you've got a guy with some defensive value who's going to hit a lot of home runs. I could never fully understand why they weren't just willing to give him a chance and just accept the weaknesses and accept the strikeouts and accept those. I mean, he's got an on-base of 306, even though he's batting 195. That's a really good on-base percentage for a guy with such a bad batting average. If he somehow can just hit 250, he's going to get on base at a 350, 360, 370 clip, and he's going to end up with an OPS somewhere in the 900s. That's a good baseball player, not just a fantasy player. That's a good player who would never receive an opportunity in Texas because they seemingly have given up on him. Now, a lot has gone right for him, so now he's in the lineup and he's proving himself. Profar has been atrocious. Beltre has had a significant injury. Napoli's hitting under 200. I don't know how you hate on Joey Gallo when they go out and sign Mike Napoli, who's hitting the same batting average in slightly fewer home runs and slightly fewer strikeouts, too, but it's close. What's your take on it? Gallo's got 14 home runs, surprisingly, that he's got 14 home runs. I believe Aaron Judge only has 15. So, you know, Aaron Judge is the story of Major League Baseball, but the real significant difference in those two is that Gallo's batting 195 and Judge is batting 315. One guy's in New York, one guy's down in Texas. What are your thoughts on Joey Gallo? When Beltre comes back, is he going to the bench or down to the minor leagues, or has 14 home runs kept him in the lineup or earned him some more at-bats, or has 195 already punched his ticket back to AAA?
He stays. I think that the Rangers are going to have to accept the fact that he's who he is. He's going to be a guy that's going to get, those stretches maybe, for 1 or 2 weeks of the season. He gets hot, he crushes the daylights out the ball, and he gets on base significantly more than what he does. But you're also going to have to live with the bat because he's going to have those 1 or 2 week stretches where, and he's going to struggle. I think there's some frustration in the sense that he's got a .278 on base percentage in the month of May compared to where he was in April, where he had a .330. So I think that he obviously has scuffled a bit more in May when you look at the fact that he's hitting .174 this month compared to .213. He is who he is, in my opinion. He's 23 years old, so he certainly has more than enough time and more than enough upside to where he can develop into being that kind of .250 hitter who can cause damage because he gets on base at around, say, a .345 clip, and he hits 35, 40 home runs a season. I think that's where he's going to peak. I think that's where he's going to settle in at. And if that's the case, and with his power, you're looking at a guy that can probably give you those kind of potential of .250, 35 home runs, 95 RBI, if you give him 550 at-bats over the next decade. The Rangers have already stated that they will put him in left field once Adrian Beltre returns sometime next month. I also would not be surprised if he gets a start or two at third base while Beltre is slowly getting back into the swing of things. His bat's going to remain in the lineup because, again, if you have no qualms with Mike Napoli, a much older ball player who really doesn't have much upside yet out of his career, if you don't have a problem with Napoli, then if you're the Rangers, I don't see a real reason why you're going to be upset about a 23-year-old guy who still hasn't come anywhere close to scratching the surface of his potential. Even at the pace that he's on right now, even if he's hitting 195, he's going to end up hitting 40-some-odd home runs and get you close to 90 RBI. And that's far more production that you're getting out of a ball player that also is under team control compared to what you did last season. You got fool's gold in September, believing that Carlos Gomez can give you the similar production that he had a few years back. He struggled before he got injured, and is probably on a disabled list for another few weeks or so, and there's no guarantee you're going to get that kind of production that you got out of him in September. The Rangers, they're still in the thick of things. They're certainly in a hunt for a wild card in late May, I should say. You're not giving up on them in the West, but still, when you look at Gallo as a whole, here's a guy that I think that you need to make a full commitment to.
Yeah, I've never been a huge Gallo guy just because I'm not a big power-only type of player. But Gallo is Gallo isn't Chris Carter in the sense that he is a decent athlete. He could possibly play third base. You could probably squeeze him into left field. I mean, if the Cardinals can try Matt Adams out in left field, and granted that collapsed, if the Cubs can move forward with Kyle Schwarber as a full-time left fielder going forward, and it looks like that's what they're going to do because everybody loves Kyle Schwarber even though he's having a bad year this year. Everybody loves that bat even though he can't defend to save his life. So if there are teams that are willing to give those guys an opportunity in left field, Joey Gallo looks like a center fielder, and they've even joked, Texas has even joked that if they need to, they could play Gallo in center field. Now, that's stretching reality a little bit, but the point is, if you can even joke about a guy being a center fielder, he should be able to be a left fielder, and then you compare him to the Schwarbers and the Matt Adams of the world. Gallo provides other value out there. He's a pretty good athlete. And again, a .306 on-base percentage. If he just gets that up to .330, that's acceptable. And so he's going to get it up to .330. You see a lot of guys who get on base and bat first. Those guys who hit .300 but don't walk, their on-base percentage are usually between 330 and 340 anyway. That's a very acceptable, if not a better-than-average on-base. Now, most sluggers have on-bases of 370, 380, even 400. So a guy like Gallo, who's going to hit 35 or 40 homers, you'd like to see an on-base in the 390s. But he obviously has his flaws. But just because he doesn't get to 390 and he only gets to 330, that's still acceptable. He's not hurting you with an on-base of 330. The Rangers are sending out rough Ned Odor every single day at second base. And granted, he's a good defensive player, so he's providing some actual baseball value because of his defense. Maybe he's a gold glover or not. I don't see him enough to know that. But I haven't heard that he's Ozzie Smith out there. But he's got an on-base of 259. I mean, honestly, I've heard guys like Keith Law say that if you have an on-base under 300, you're probably hurting your team more than helping, unless you're really, really helping on the defensive side. So catchers, some center fielders, Andrelton Simmons at shortstop because of all the run saves that he provides with his defense alone. You know, those kinds of guys, you can accept a bad OBP. Rough Ned Odor is out there every single day as just a good defender. With an on-base of not 300, not 290, his on-base is 259. It's difficult to argue that if you put Gallo in left field, he's not a significantly more valuable player striking out 220 times this year than Rough Ned Odor, who will probably hit 15 to 20 homers, will probably steal 10 or 15 bases, but he's going to hit 220 with an on-base of 265, and people think he's a star. He just signed an extension. And Joey Gallo can't even get on the field without significant amounts of injuries and slumps. That, to me, is what just doesn't make sense about how the Rangers have essentially given up on him.
It doesn't make a lot of sense as to why they would at this point. You look at the fact that, you know, they're sticking out the line of the Shields in left field. You look at the fact that right now, when you look at this Rangers lineup, they don't have a lot of guys that are hitting terribly well. You know, you touched on Odor, and yeah, this is a guy who signed a long-term extension, a guy that they expected would be an anchor to this franchise, and he has done been anything but this season. He's scuffling. The fact is that, you know, he still, you know, hasn't been able to run the base pass as well as he should be. You know that he's been dealing with injuries as well. You know, the one upside of all of this is that the Rangers are probably going to get into that stretch where they're going to hit the hell out of the ball. You know, on one hand, we're looking at the frustration up and down this lineup, you know, Gallo, Napoli, of Odor, you know, you've got Gomez on the disabled list. You know, the Rangers don't have anyone really hitting the ball with any kind of consistency right now. And if you want to look at the positive side of things, maybe this might be a buy-low opportunity here. That, you know, maybe you might want to try to go after a Rough Ned Odor, maybe or a Gallup, or to a certain extent a Napoli. There's some buy-low potential here if you try to look at the positive of it when you look at the Rangers right now. Again, you know, the weather's going to warm up, obviously, in Texas. You know, we haven't hit blast furnace season yet, but we're getting close to it. We'll probably get there about another 3 or 4 weeks or so. That means that Arlington, that ball is going to carry a heck of a lot more than it normally does in April and May. And considering the fact that, you know, that they've got some nice home stands coming up in a very near future against some pitching suspect teams, I think that this might be a time to, again, where you're a bit frustrated with, you know, if you're someone, an owner, that's frustrated with the Rangers that you've got on your roster, you might want to hold on to them, you know, in the belief that these guys are going to get better. At the same time, if you're someone who sees an owner that's frustrated with his Rangers, this might be a sell-high opportunity. This might be a buy-low opportunity. And that's the mindset that I would take it as. I think that the Rangers, you know, they've had issues at first base. And I know that, you know, Napoli is their best option. He's their best option, but maybe why not throw Gallo out there at first base on occasion? You know, is that the option that they would consider? I would think at some point maybe you do. Maybe you start giving Gallo when he continues to struggle once Beltre returns. So I think that there's a certain amount of flexibility that the Rangers are playing with once Beltre returns, and I think that all signs point to the fact that when you talk about this, the winner is probably going to be Gallo.
Talking with Brian C. Williams from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BCWilliams71. If you want to talk sports with us, you can do it in multiple locations on Facebook. A podcast to be named later is this podcast. We have a Facebook group for it. If you want to talk just fantasy stuff, or we really talk anything, anywhere, but we also have the rotoexperts.com fantasy sports show page on Facebook as well. So if you want to join either of those groups, talk with us, post questions, post topics for possible future podcasts, by all means do that. I'm Chris Mitchell, your host here. You can follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73. You can read me over at rotoexperts.com as well as minorleagueball.com. Occasionally over at Baseball America, and in the not-too-distant future, I got to finish an article here. But I'm going to start doing some articles for Fangraphs in partnership with another Chris Mitchell who talks about prospects. So we're going to have a Mitchell & Mitchell kind of article going on over at Fangraphs. So once I finish that article, we'll be posting over there as well, so you'll be seeing my name associated with the same guy, a different guy, same name over there as well. Brandon, we talked about the hot and the cold. We did a little bit of a fetish of focus here on Joey Gallo. Now let's get your waiver wire report. Hook us up with the guys who were available and claimable.
All right, let's go ahead and get going. One of the hottest guys right now, actually two pitchers that are getting a lot of run, Mike Clevinger out in Cleveland. You know, last week, only at around 10-15%. Now this guy is approaching, you know, the 50% mark, as he has done a very solid job in filling in for Corey Kluber. Talk is now that he might stay in the rotation once Kluber returns in the next couple of weeks. You know, you can't fault the fact that the guy, three starts with a 1.55 ERA, he's 2-1, has struck out 19, and has allowed just 6 hits in 17 and 2/3 innings. He's certainly a guy you might want to take a strong look at. Joe Ross out in Washington is another guy that, you know, is starting to come back. You know, strong 8th inning start a couple of days ago. He came back from AAA. He is getting monster run support. 5.32 ERA, that is certainly going to go down at some point. I like the fact that he is approaching nearly a strikeout inning with 23 2/3 innings. He runs scored for him in his first 4 starts, and that is a big league record. He's not going to get that kind of production the rest of the way, but he's a young, strong arm. And as the Nationals continue to start putting distance between themselves and everyone in the National League East, he's going to be a guy that you're definitely going to want to get your hands on. Adam Frazier of the Pirates is a guy that, you know, you like, and I really like a lot. He's right now at 369, 2 homers, 15 RBI. He's a strong play in deeper leagues, and also in most NL onlys. He's probably a guy that's already scooped up, but in deeper mixed leagues, he's someone that you want to take a strong look at. They're expecting Gregory Polanco back. He's actually off the disabled list today. Might impact Frazier a bit, but with the way Frazier is hitting the ball, I think that the Pirates are going to find ways to keep him in the lineup. Another guy that, you know, you touched on earlier, Matt Adams, traded from St. Louis to Atlanta in the wake of the Freddie Freeman injury for the Braves. Thus far, you know, like you said, you know, he is making the most of his opportunity. He's now at about, say, 20% owned in mixed leagues. There's a guy who's a former 20 home run hitter. That ballpark is playing a lot better for hitters than I initially expected it would, and he is really taking advantage of that. Right now, 303, 3 home runs, 11 RBI. Would prefer he's getting on base a little bit more, just 4 walks compared to 22 strikeouts, but the power is real. If you can grab him, I would say go get him right now. I think that, you know, he is someone that will probably get in a range of, I'd say, maybe 20-plus home runs if he stays in that spot the rest of the way. And even when Freeman returns, he is capable of playing some left field. Chris Taylor for the Dodgers is another guy that, you know, I'm liking. You know, he's close to around 30% ownership in mixed leagues. The Dodgers are also talking about getting his bat into the outfield right now. And when you think about the fact that, you know, really no one is hitting the ball with any kind of consistency in L.A., with the exception of Taylor, 325, 5 home runs, 16 RBI. And when you look at the fact that, you know, he's going to end up getting not only second base for second base eligibility in most leagues, once he gets in the outfield and gets eligibility, he's a multi-positional guy that you certainly want to grab a hold of at this point. Devin Travis's bat is starting to warm up a bit. home runs in back-to-back games this week. He's now at 238, three home runs, 17 runs scored, four stolen bases. I think that he's a guy that's going to start warming up a bit. He's going to continue, you know, hitting the ball with a little more power. And, again, like I touched on earlier, once that Blue Jays lineup starts settling in, and once Tulowitzki gets back and you see some of these guys starting to hit the ball well, I think Trapps is going to be one of the main beneficiaries of that revival out in Toronto. Catchers that, you know, I know is how much you want. You hate catchers, Chris, so you might want to plug your ears on it. Alex Avila in Detroit, he's been up and down this season as far as his ownership is concerned, but there's no denying that he has been fairly productive for the most part. You know, he's hitting 350 right now. Go figure. Five home runs, 19 RBI. He's got an on-base percentage, you know, hovering around 400 at this point. So while it's all in all possibility, it's going to fall down at some point. I think right now you run with it, and as hard as it is to get quality catchers who can give you some offensive fantasy baseball, I think you grab him, which is part of the reason why he's approaching 50% at this point. Wellington Castillo has been hitting the ball well late. He's now at 330 right now, four home runs, 16 RBI. And you have to think that, yo, this guy does give you some level of offensive production. Here's a guy who hit 33 home runs in the previous two seasons going into this year. You know, his bat is solid enough to where the Orioles are putting him as a DH on occasion. You know, he was at around 67% at the start of last week. He's now approaching near 85% at this point. As George mentioned earlier, Kota Glover is now going to be the closer out in Washington. You know, like George said, you know, closer by default, but, you know, the guy does have the ability and the strikeout potential to where he could take this thing and really run with it. He doesn't, you know, he's just under a strikeout per inning right now, but he's got a 2.57 ERA, a whip of one. I think that now that he has been certified as the closer, I think his ownership is going to climb closer to 80%. He's around 47% right now. I think he'll be closer to around 80 within the next 2 weeks, especially if he is able to hold down the fort and continue, you know, shooting up. Another guy, that, you know, Angel Miranda is a guy that I like. Cuban pitcher with the Mariners right now. He steadily is climbing to the point where he's around 40%. Nine strikeouts in his last start last Friday. He gets a start today at the Nationals, and actually that game has just started if you're listening to this right now on Thursday. But I like the fact that this guy, you know, is getting hitters out. You know, 47 strikeouts in 48 two-thirds innings, a whip of 1.26, 4.28 ERA, you know, about league average in the American League. But when you're looking for someone who can give you some strikeouts, I think Miranda's a pretty solid guy.
We're talking with Brandon C. Williams from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter at bcwilliams71. If you're in a deeper format, I don't think you ever cut a veteran established player, no matter how bad they're performing, unless basically their leg falls off. So in deeper leagues, this question may not apply. But in shallower yearly formats, 10-team leagues, 12-team leagues, you see guys like a Matt Harvey, or you see some veterans that are really struggling where they justify getting rid of them. You know, maybe you add a Justin Smoke, even though he's a limited player, to get rid of a veteran that just has just been horrible. Who are some big names that it may be difficult to release them because they have a track record, they have a history, they're a name like Matt Harvey. But who are some guys with that you know, that poster board kind of, that headline name, the headline history, but they're performing at a level now where in shallow leagues where there's a lot of availability on the waiver wire and you only start so many players, who are some of those big names that you think actually justify being released right now?
I think that one of the guys that I think that, you know, we touched on earlier is Carlos Gomez. I know that he's on the disabled list right now, but again, he wasn't doing much before he went on the DL. At that point, 246, four home runs, five stolen bases. Not the Rangers were expecting out of him. He's a high-risk move if you do dump him in a standard league, but I think that he is worth a dump if you can find a guy that, you know, that's going to be able to give you, you know, solid production from now and the remainder of the season. Another guy that I think that you probably might want to start taking a look at, and moving out Houston, Carlos Beltran. When you look at the fact that, you know, the Astros have got top-end hitting prospects down in the minors up the Wazoo, and you look at the production that Beltran has given them this season, it kind of makes you wonder as to why did they go out and blow $19 million on a 40-year-old outfielder who is really, you know, in a sense that, you know, 1 year too soon rather than 1 year too late. And I think that's what I think the opposite holds true of what the Astros have done with Beltran. He's been in and out of the lineup all season. Obviously, at this stage of his career, he's not going to give you any stolen bases. But the fact of the matter is, right now, you know, that bat just continues to slide down. Right now, you look at his numbers this season, just 234, 4 home runs, 14 RBI, only 8 walks compared to 41 strikeouts. So I think at this point in time, I think it's safe that you go ahead and drop Beltran. Borderline Hall of Fame ball player, has been great for fantasy teams over the years, but I think at this point it's probably safe to say that you can go ahead and drop him at this point. Another guy, you know, he is who he is at this point, and that's Jason Hayward of the Cubs. He's never going to be – I think it's safe to say he's never going to be the guy that we once envisioned when he came up with Atlanta, guy that we thought would be, you know, just a dominant fantasy ball player, potential 2020 guy that would hit 280, 295, you know, 256, 4 home runs, 18 RBI, 1 stolen base. Yeah, I know the Cubs really aren't hitting well as a whole outside, say, Bryant and Rizzo for the most part. But at this point in time, I think that Jason Hayward's a guy you can probably safely drop in most standard leagues. There's much better production out there that you can go out and get. A couple of other guys that I think that you can probably feel safe about dropping at this point. I wouldn't, you know, one guy I certainly wouldn't would be Gregory Polanco. Like I said, he's just off the disabled list. He's scheduled to be in the lineup today for Pittsburgh, but, you know, he's not looking at, you know, the latest notes on it. He wasn't hitting well at all, 252, 1 home run, 6 stolen bases in 34 games before he went on the DL. Far cry from a guy who hit 22 homers, 17 steals, and 86 RBI last season. I think that Polanco's a guy, rather than, you know, someone that you'd want to dump, I think you might want to think long and hard if, you know, if you can find an owner that one of his owners who is really frustrated with him and think about maybe dropping him, you know, maybe thinking about considering moving him. I think that he's someone you probably want to look and go after at this point. Francisco Liriano has had, you know, his share of success for fantasy owners. I think that right now, it's when you look at the lack of production that he has had this season, and you look at the Jays rotation outside of Stroman for the most part, it's been frustrating because it seems like every other week that Aaron Sanchez finds himself back on the disabled list. But Liriano, certainly not the pitcher that he was last season. At this point, he's probably someone that you want to drop. He continues to fall in ownership. Right now, he's hovering just above 40. So I would say it's safe to say that, you know, you might want to strongly consider dropping him. The Sashi Iwakuma of Seattle, you know, he's never a great fantasy guy, but he's always consistent. He's always a guy that, you know, you knew that you could get near the back end of drafts. You need to get around 200 innings out of him. He'll give you decent numbers, 13 wins. We'll keep that ERA probably around, say, the upper threes. You know, a guy that would just be solid. But, you know, he's been bothered with injuries this season. He's a guy that I would certainly look at dropping and moving on. I think he's someone that, you know, you can go ahead and move on from and feel pretty confident in knowing that, you know, you can find better for him. One more guy, a guy that George touched on as well. I don't understand why the Tigers are hell-bent on giving Francisco Rodriguez another opportunity of getting the closer's role back. You know, like George mentioned, no velocity on that fastball. And when you look at his numbers, 7.16 ERA and a whip, 7.7. That's certainly not a guy that you want on your roster at this point. And even if the Tigers do give him another opportunity to get that closer's role, I would probably venture that it's going to be more disastrous than it will be positive, meaning in the sense that he might get a save or two, but those ERA and that whip will still remain ugly. He's now at around 38% in leagues. I think he's going to continue to fall. He might see a small spike if he does get that closer job back, but at this point in time, he's a safe guy to just move away from. Thanks for the memories, K-Rod.
Yeah, he wasn't really on my list of as I said in the previous segment, he wasn't a guy that I was willing to even draft, never mind hold on to and be completely unwilling to release. We aren't related, and he doesn't owe me money, so I didn't even own him, never mind being afraid to release him. That's the Waiver Wire Report today from Brandon C. Williams. Obviously, earlier in the program, we had the closer report with George Kurtz. If you want to follow George on Twitter, at George Kurtz. If you want to follow Brandon, at BCWilliams71, you can read all of their content over at rotoexperts.com. I highly recommend you do it. Join us all on Facebook, the podcast to be named later, and the rotoexperts.com fantasy sports show. Brandon, thanks a lot for coming on today. Look forward to talking more baseball with you in the coming days and weeks ahead. And, of course, every Thursday we'll get your Waiver Wire Report as well.
Always a joy. Heads up, the weekly Waiver Wire column will be out later on this afternoon on rotoexperts.com, so you'll look for it maybe later on this afternoon or earlier this evening. Again, great to talk to you, Chris, and I am sure that we will talk in the near future.
Yes, that's Brandon C. Williams. Timely. The closer report comes out, I believe, on Tuesdays. The Waiver Wire Report actually comes out on Thursday, so we get George just a couple days after his report appears on rotoexperts.com, and we actually get Brandon on here before the report is even published. So we try to be as timely as we can, and putting them both together in one program is kind of my plan. So that's why we do it on Thursdays at 11. It'd be nice to have George on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, but we just don't do programs every single Tuesday. And even if we do, I just like having the whole episode being fantasy related. And so that's what we're going to be doing going forward. So Thursdays at 11 o'clock, the closer report followed by the Waiver Wire Report. And just for those of you out there listening, the programs have been long. I'm going to try to get it cut down. They need to be focused. They need to be sharp. They need to be quick paced. So going forward, we're going to do that. I like to ramble. I like to get these guys' thoughts and opinions. And I just like talking baseball, whether it's baseball or fantasy baseball. And sometimes that leads to these longer shows. But going forward, I am going to work on getting these things in and out quick and fast, pick up the pace of play, and get the podcast moving and getting it done in 30 to 40 minutes. So that's going to be the approach and attempt going forward. I'm also hopefully, as it's published over at minorleagueball.com, I'll give you hopefully the times where each segment appears. So if you want to fast forward through the banter and the conversation and get right to the close report or right to the waiver wire report, I can give you the times where these segments happen, and you can just zoom right through it. And if you like listening to us banter about scoring categories or hot and cold players or hockey or whatever we talk about, by all means, we'd love to have you listen to the entire program. But if going forward you just want to hear what you just want to hear, which is the waiver wire report and the closer report, we'll try to keep this quicker and shorter and sweeter, and also tell you when they're appearing as far as time goes, as far as the program. So we'll work on that as well. Thanks everybody for tuning in today. Like talking some sports with you, like talking fantasy sports. If you want to talk with me on Twitter, by all means, at CJMitch73. You can read my minor league fantasy-related prospect content over at rotoexperts.com. Or if you just want to read anything baseball-related that I like to say or do, you can do that over at minorleagueball.com, which is where this podcast resides as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Be good, be safe, and hopefully be in the sun, because up here in Boston, not so great weather. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in.